Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. My guests this week are Drew Hill and Bob Ewing of Inch by Inch. Drew and Bob are lifelong friends and currently art directors for Element 3 in Indianapolis. After hours, they run Inch by Inch, a monthly subscription button club. Inch by Inch features different artists each month, and they donate all of the profits to charities, focusing on art in schools. We talk about the birth of their friendship, why they chose the charities they donate to, and their relationship with Busy Beaver Button Company, French Paper, and Mama's Sauce, all right after this. We're looking for sponsors. If you want to sponsor the Creative South Podcast to help keep the lights on and to make the podcast even better, then email me at jason@creativesouthga.com or hit me up on Twitter at creativesopod. Cool. Bob, Drew, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So let's start off with, you know, normally I ask people where they grew up, but since it's the two of you, how did you guys meet?
Well, actually, we share a very common story, so we can actually probably tell it together.
Yeah. Okay.
Hit it. So we, Drew and I went to the same middle school, high school. So we've known each other for many a years, and we really kind of became friends in art class in high school.
Yeah.
I think we both took every single art class that
pretty
we could.
Much. Yeah.
and often, you know, gave our teachers as much crap as possible during that time. So,
but the good kind of crap.
Yeah.
There was a lot of love.
They were good sports. It was a lot of fun. So,
so you went to middle school, high school together. Did you guys go to college together too? Or
almost?
We almost did.
Almost did.
Yeah, Drew is a year older than me, and he went to, it used to be called the Cincinnati Academy of Design, right?
Nailed it.
And I also got accepted there the year after when I graduated, but I decided to go to architecture school instead, which was not the best choice at the time. But
So Bob, how do you go from architecture school to being a designer?
Yeah, that's kind of a long, kind of winding path. I spent 3.5 years at architecture school. I left there because I decided I didn't want to be an architect and decided not to go ahead and finish out and get some sort of degree. And I did commercial electric work and trim carpentry and some other random jobs before I decided I didn't want to be in that kind of manual labor world and decided I need to go back to school. And at that point, I kind of figured out that graphic design was a thing. Whereas before, I think when I was graduating high school, I didn't really know what graphic design was, and sure. I didn't really know what I was going to do with a commercial art degree. Drew apparently didn't fill me in on that side of things.
I left it out. I kept it to myself for a while.
So, Drew, when you went to school, did you go for graphic design, or did you switch majors 17 times and do odd jobs too?
I'm actually a second generation art director. My dad owned his own design agency for a while. Mm-hmm. And I actually attended Cincinnati Academy of Design was his alma mater. So kind of followed in dad's footsteps a little bit. So I grew up around his studio and learned a little bit of what graphic design, commercial art, advertising was. A little earlier than most people are exposed to it. So I kind of had a glimpse into this as early as my teens and kind of knew that's where I was headed pretty early on.
Gotcha. So when you guys got out of college, did you both end up, because I know you guys have worked a few jobs together. You're kind of a package deal at this point, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
did you guys both start working at the same place like right out of there? After you finished up rather Bob finished up because he was on a longer track.
Yeah. I went to school and worked in Cincinnati for about 5 years before moving back to Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And it was probably 3 or so years after that, a couple jobs before we wound up working at the same place together.
Yeah. And I was once I got my associate's degree at a community college, for visual communications, I work for a digital printer as their graphic designer. And I worked there for, I think, about 2 years. And then an opening opened up at the agency that Drew had just recently got a job at. So I kind of jumped ship. And that's kind of when we kind of started, our friendship kind of, rekindled, if you will. Cause we hadn't really been, you know, we would run across each other occasionally.
Well, I lost track of you. You're all over the place.
I was moving around a lot. So we kind of, kind of got back into the, you know, doing the same thing. So.
Gotcha. So you guys have, how many places, different places have you worked together now at this point?
Element 3 is the second place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we just two, but we've been, I mean, that's six years about, we'll be in 6 years in July. So that we've worked together, at two different agencies. So
but we couldn't get enough of each other. So then we went and started a company together.
Well, let's jump right into that. How did the idea for Inch by Inch kind of come around?
I mean, it really kind of happened rather quickly. Things escalated quickly, as people might say. It just was kind of born out of, although we'd worked together for 6 years, five years at the time, we didn't really get to work together that much. We both had our own clients and we were kind of doing our own thing, even though we were for the same companies. And, it was just kind of born out of like, hey, let's do something together. And it really started over a text message, one night.
Yeah, pretty much. I walked by Bob's desk and sparked the conversation, and the idea of possibly doing buttons was thrown out there, and that was about that for a day or so. And then a little germ of an idea popped into my head, and then, a little text conversation, and 3 minutes later, we had the basic idea for Inch by Inch.
Yeah. Drew came up with the name just over text message, and it was kind of born out of like, let's get buttons. Let's do something with buttons. Maybe we can do a club. No one's doing that.
Sure.
But we didn't want to, like, while selfishly we wanted more buttons, we didn't want to create those buttons. That would be even more, you know, work that we'd be taking on. So we thought of the idea of, you know, partnering with, having a different featured artist each month. And then the way we're going to really be able to compensate those people, per se. So the idea, like, well, what if we just, you know, give away the money to charity, and that kind of spawned the whole youth art education and all the issues that are with that in schools and how it's getting stripped out.
Yeah.
And teachers don't have, you know, budgets for supplies and stuff like that. So
kind of walk me through that genesis of you come up with the idea for, you know, the company. Well, let's start first. Why'd you decide buttons?
I think we both had an affection for 1-inch buttons, and even early on, and kind of growing up in the era we did, you know, in the 90s, lots of bands were doing buttons. I don't have any of those buttons. Drew still has some of his original ones. and then just also like the design challenges that come with, you know, designing something for such a small canvas is really intriguing.
Cool.
And they're, I think the other thing was, they're, you know, collectible, but they don't take up a lot of space. So, like most creatives, we like to collect stuff. And small things are easier to kind of collect with,
without seeming like you're a hoarder.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm well aware as I look around at the crap that is piled up in the corner right next to me. So, you know, you're doing that. At what point did you decide, and what caused you to decide to give the money away, other than the, you know, you weren't really going to be able to compensate the artists that you're working with, but what was it about that that stuck out?
Well, I think part of it was that we had this idea for this company, but we really didn't think of it as a company. It was just kind of a passion project of ours. So, gaining monetary funds was never our end goal. So, we just, thought about it, and it's like, this is a great opportunity for us to give back a little bit and to kind of help inspire others and give others opportunities that we were afforded in our education coming up.
And I think, you know, both of us are parents, and thinking about, you know, now that we're responsible adults, we're thinking about more of our future and our kids' future. And it's kind of a scary thought that maybe our kids might not have art in school, and knowing how big of a role that played for us in our careers. And then, there's a plethora of facts around what art does and how that betters a student. And in the long run, even though if they're not in, you know, going to apply that in any way in their future.
Sure. So how does that structure work for you? Because I know you guys give back, but do you give back to the same program every time, or do you give to different schools throughout the area, or how does that work?
Yeah. So for our first year, we identified two charities that we thought kind of aligned with what we had hoped to see this money go to.
Sure.
And we're partnering up again with those guys again for a second year. Mm-hmm. But after that, we've entertained the ideas of looking out towards other charities. We support one local charity, Art with the Heart. They serve underserved and underprivileged youth on the Near East Side of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And they focus on a lot of visual arts. And then the second charity we support is 826 Shy out of Chicago. It's part of the 826 National Program. Uh-huh. And that all is about creative writing. So it's a nice mix hitting multiple creative outlets.
Okay. So since you're both designers, where did the idea for one that does creative writing come from? Because So the company I work for, we have a foundation. We give to four categories, but all of those four categories very much align with what our firm does. And I mean, creative writing definitely does play into, you know, creativity and things like that. But being designers, it's not necessarily your passion. So
that one kind of we got some help from our button sponsor, Busy Beaver Buttons out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they kind of helped us identify a charity that was still kind of, you know, local to us in the Midwest, but also local to them that they had worked with in the past.
Sure.
So they kind of really helped us with that. So it was really, I mean, while we gave that a lot of thought and wanted to make sure that those charities aligned with what we, you know, what we were trying to get out of this and trying to get back, it was kind of that with their help that we chose 826 Shy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, coming from personally and Bob a little bit with our last agency, a more traditional advertising background, I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of great copywriters through the years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's a dying craft, but it's, an under-recognized craft.
Oh yeah. I would definitely agree with that.
To try and sit down and write headlines or just a paragraph is a nightmare to me. So we need more copywriters out in the world.
Yes.
I think there's a definitely a need. And, I think that writing is also something that's probably not as recognized in schools, especially from a creative writing level.
Sure.
As it probably once was.
Yeah. I mean, well, I know, you know, when I was in school, I don't think they really taught creative writing at all. And, you know, it was, you know, write this research paper, cite your notes, get bored to death, procrastinate, go plagiarize.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a valuable thing. So let's kind of switch gears about it and talk about how you guys pick and choose the artists that you work with. And if there's a specific reason you pick certain ones over others, other than just they're your friends.
Yeah. I mean, some of them, yeah. While some of them we have met and some of them are friends of ours, others we haven't met at all.
Sure.
I think what we try and do is just curate. We try and plan ahead and curate those featured artists so that we're kind of giving a mix of different styles, and hand lettering and illustration and, just trying to mix it up each month. Mm-hmm. So that things are completely different. I think that plays a big part of it. But one of the cool things is that you can reach out to people. And I mean, almost everyone has been just super kind and really excited about working with us, which has been amazing. You know, like the John Contino, for example, we've never met with him. Mm-hmm. Never met him, never talked with him. We reached out and he was so excited to create some buttons. Like it was awesome. So
did you just, so with John specifically, did you just you know, email back and forth. And
yeah, so it started with, typically it starts with the email, and we'll send an email, and it has, you know, this is who we are, this is what we do, mm-hmm. This is what we're kind of asking for, so that we're setting expectations. And then we also attach we have a one page sheet that has like a lot more information about us. And then we also have the benefit of having a year or so under our belt. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we can direct people, if they're not familiar with us, to Instagram, and they can kind of see literally all the artists that we work with just give us credibility instantly. So
yeah, it's been a great opportunity to work with people that we look up to as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had like folks like Draplin and Alan Peters. We had met before, but, you know, actually getting to engage with them was really awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Draplin will chew your ear off.
Yes.
Alan's quite a bit more reserved unless you get him going.
It's true.
So, excuse me. So, you know, you guys have been doing this for a year. What's, other than giving back, being able to give back and support the artistic community, what's been kind of the most rewarding part of it so far?
It's a good question. It's been fun from beginning to end. To be able to get together with Bob at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night to put buttons in little baggies and staple them until midnight doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but it actually is. And it's been really rewarding. And after a year, still, the shine hasn't worn off. It's still a lot of fun. And, I think that's kind of been, a bit of a reward in its own that, Bob and I get to spend some time together, like at Element 3, we're both, very busy on our own projects and our own clients. So to get to spend some quality time, hanging out with my buddy here, it's always fun just to get together and hang out and stuff some buttons.
Yeah, I think that's been a huge benefit for sure. I think another thing is seeing how like excited people get about these buttons. You know, mm-hmm. like from receiving the little envelope in the mail, like people get as our friend Russ calls it casual mail. People be like, oh, you know, this, you just don't, you get a lot of junk mail these days. So like, it's kind of like a nice little surprise to get this little yellow fridge paper envelope in the mail. And then, yeah, just really seeing people like from the artists getting excited to the, you know, the fans and the members, and then even our sponsors, they're really, you know, been wonderful and backing us, and they get just as excited as kind of we do about it. So, which kind of just keeps us fueled, you know, when you spent 4 hours stapling baggies of buttons to, you know, letterpress packaging, it kind of keeps you going. So.
Gotcha. So when you're doing this, cause I know when you first started out, it was right about the time that Periscope was getting really popular and you were periscoping all your, for lack of a better term, baggy stapling parties. Yes. And I know I'd see your wives there, and there was sometimes a few other people there. Mm-hmm. How, throughout the year this going on, how have you been able to maintain that work-life balance where you've got, you know, Element 3 work, then you go home to your families, and you still got inch-by-inch stuff to do? How does that all balance out?
It's challenging at times. I think, that we have a lot of respect and, friends that, you know, respect what we're doing, and our wives respect, what we're ultimately up to. So, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But
I think one thing that's been, not unexpected, but not really planned, is that like, each one of us can kind of pick up the slack any certain month, mm-hmm. when, you know, life gets in the way or work gets in the way, where it kind of has just worked out where one of us will have, you know, just kind of steps up, whether you have the free time or not, but like just does a little bit extra that month. And then the favor is returned, you know, the next month or the next month.
I mean, it's a balancing act, but it's, every month's different. Like you said, having families and work. Every month presents its own challenges. But yeah, we step up and make it happen one way or the other.
One thing we do too is we're always kind of reevaluating the process and how we do fulfillment. Where we early on we had all the envelopes got two stamps on them, and we quickly realized that we could cut a couple hours out of each month just by having those printed in the small in the like the price that that cost was well worth it.
I can imagine
things. So and then other things like. We're about to buy like an electric stapler,
big investment,
maybe $9 or something like that. But we've been using this, red swingline stapler and like literally hand.
What, it's not a red Boston stapler.
What's that?
I said, it's not a red Boston stapler.
No, it's swingline.
It's a swingline.
So, just trying to kind of recognize where you can get better, and do things quicker, always just kind of reevaluating our process.
Gotcha. So, speaking of that and evaluating the process, since you guys have done this, I've seen a lot of other similar kind of themed ideas pop up around it. Flat imitation is the most sincere form of flattery, but. Yeah. Have any of those people reached out to you for advice and things like that? And how do you feel about offering that advice sometimes?
I think one of the best things about our creative industry is that people are very, for the most part, very open about what they're doing and how they're doing it. So just like we reached out to friends to get their input, whether it's, Brian French or Nick Sombrato, like we also reached out to like Cotton Bureau and Jay Finelli and, getting input for them and trying to, see how they do things. So I think it's kind of ingrained in us too, is sharing. We don't have any issue with telling people what we're doing or how we're doing it. We've gotten a lot of value out of asking those questions to other people. So we're happy to kind of share that forward. Cause it's just going to make you better in the end. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think that's nice. Cause there's, you get a lot of people out there who have, and there's nothing wrong with a competitive spirit, but they have an overly competitive spirit where they're not willing to share and collaborate and things like that. And it puts up walls and boundaries on both sides. Mm-hmm. And instead of being mutually beneficial to people. And
yeah, I think one of the things about Inch by Inch is that, we're kind of middlemen in this whole thing. We're working with some really fantastic artists, and we're selling them to people that want to have sweet buttons, and then we're distributing, those funds to charity. So while Inch by Inch is our thing, at the end of the day, it's really going to a good cause. So why feel the need to protect? I don't think that's ever been something we really thought about. It's all good. It's all love. It's all happiness over here.
How have you seen things grow over the past year? I mean, obviously, when you started out, you're small.
Well, I think like personally, like Drew and I have both grown a lot and learned a lot about ourselves and what we're capable of, and how to manage things. We've learned a lot about business, a lot more than I ever thought. In fact, the owner of Element 3, she really challenged us early on to go about this as a business and treat it like that. And Nick Sombrato challenged us with the same thing. That this, in order to be successful, you have to think about this and act like a business.
Mm-hmm. So, well, let's talk about that. So what advice for people who are interested in doing things and, setting up a business, whether it be your model or another model, what was some of the best advice that you got?
Yeah. Some of the best advice we got, it took us probably 8 or 9 months to sink in, and it was our wives telling us to get a lawyer and get an accountant, and get QuickBooks and start, starting from the beginning, from the books is like super important. But then also just like doing a pro forma, which we didn't even know what that meant in the beginning, and, you know, forecasting and having these goals and kind of, you know, having a year and 5 year and 10 year goal, you know, so you can kind of like have something to aim to. And then that also helps you when you're going after sponsors and you can kind of show them, hey, these are our goals. Although they may be lofty, this is what, you know, this is what you can expect, if not, you know, somewhere around there, less or more. So,
sure. Yeah. And, not to sell yourself short, because yeah, Bob and I, we seriously underestimated ourselves and what this could be. We thought it'd just be this fun little adventure to make some buttons and, you know, do a little good in the world. And, Tiffany, our boss and our wives, you know, we're on us, like, you know, this is, you have an idea here. Mm-hmm. And this could grow and could be something. So take it serious. And, you know, we did things like the pro forma. And yeah, I don't think until a few months in, yeah, we realized that this was really taking off, much to, you know, our surprise. But
yeah, I think being somewhat naive in the beginning also kind of helped us. You know, not realizing kind of the impact this was going to have or the impact that we were going to have, kind of made it a little more doable for us.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss, sort of thing.
We thought like maybe our friends and our like moms would sign up, just, you know, out of pity for us and what we were doing.
Well, did they?
Yeah. And we had what? Almost 300 members in the first 3 months.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
our 6 month goal was 500 members and we fell just short of that. So like it just kind of ballooned on us and, a lot faster than we ever kind of imagined. It's plateaued since then, which is kind of a good thing. If we would have hit our 1 year goal, we would have gone insane.
Economies of scale.
Yeah, totally.
So let's go back to the pro forma thing, because I'm business is not necessarily something that a lot of creatives are good at, and a lot of creatives don't want to be good at it, and I can't say that I blame them. But when you were establishing those goals and establishing all of that, what criteria did you use to figure out, okay, this is where we want to be at 6 months, this is where we want to be at a year? And then forecasting past that, because you've never done it before. So it's, are you just taking a shot in the dark, or were you doing research? And
I can't really say, I mean, being that what we were doing didn't exist and hadn't, you know, been done before. I mean, sure. there's all kinds of like subscription services from like, Bark Box and, you know, all of those kind of things, but mm-hmm. not really in the way that we were going about it. So, I mean, in all honesty, we were just kind of guessing,
shots in the dark.
But you have to start somewhere, and that's kind of what our like CFO kind of, when we met with him so he could kind of explain to us what a pro forma was and what that consisted of, you know, he basically is like, you just have to start, you have to get something on paper, and that's kind of the biggest, I think that's where a lot of people fail. They don't get off start, you know, they have an idea, but they're scared to do it. And when the idea is the hardest part.
Yeah. So. Well, I know for me, I mean, so when I was in college, I minored in marketing and communications, and I had to take a bunch of accounting classes, and they explained a pro forma to me about 15 times. And it took me being out of school for almost 15 years to finally sort of understand what it is. So I can definitely see that. But yeah, I think what you were saying, that coming up with an idea is the hardest part. And then you know what the idea is and you can fake it till you make it on the rest, as long as you have good advisors in place.
Yeah. And I think you can't undervalue that. Inch by Inch is such a collaborative company. Like having those, you know, from everything, from having those advisors, and people to ask questions and look up to, to the artist themselves. So.
Sure. So, you know, when you've worked with artists who do have more of a business background, do they ever offer any suggestions to bring to the table, or after they've kind of learned about it?
Artists, not so much, not that I can recall. Nick Sombranto from Mama Sauce has definitely given us a lot of business savvy.
Yeah.
He's an artist in his own right.
He's a wizard.
Yeah. Wizard would be the more accurate term.
Wizard is proper terminology for Nixon Brado. So.
Yeah.
So he might be part robot too. So
I am fairly convinced that he is, caffeine runs through his blood versus actual blood because he has so much energy.
Which is funny because I don't think I've ever actually seen him drink any caffeine.
No, me either.
Yeah.
So, kind of moving forward, what, since we talked about the performance, setting goals and all, what are your goals with it and, for the next year of growing it to that point?
We've got a lot of things cooking. I don't know if we're ready to spill the beans yet, but we see a lot of opportunity for, diversifying, both, our product offering as far as through our online store, but also in trying to build a community around Inch by Inch. The one thing that we've heard a lot from members and just fans is how can I get involved? How can I support?
Sure.
So we have a couple of ideas that we're hoping to execute on in 2016 to try and get it out there so that more people can be a part, and instead of just buying buttons, maybe helping contribute to some buttons as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately our and while it wasn't necessarily how we started out, it's kind of evolved to this, but our whole kind of shtick now is kind of to influence and inspire, and that's really kind of what we hope to do with Inch by Inch, from just inspiring artwork, to inspiring people to do something good, to give back. As designers, we have this incredible ability to, to tell stories and to communicate in ways that really resonate with people. Mm-hmm. So we can all, have this opportunity to give back to something that's meaningful to you. So,
yeah. So, you talked about using things to get sponsors and all. Let's talk about some of your sponsors and I guess somewhat give them a shout out, but talk about how you develop those relationships as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you do is you reach out to your friends first.
Yeah.
We had kind of built, a friendship with Brian French and Nixon Brado over the years through meeting him at Creative South. And then Drew and I took a trip up to Niles. It's not too far north of us. It's just a couple hours north.
Okay.
To kind of tour French Paper and meet all those awesome people, and that was kind of how we first met Brian. But I think it all started on the internet. But
I mean, if you go even further back, I mean, wasn't Nick kind of scared of you at first? You're a bit of a, you thought you might be a stalker.
Nick was telling the story like a year. The first time we met him was at Creative South. The first year we went in 2014, and I've always been a big fan of like championing other people's work.
Sure.
And people do awesome stuff. So I get excited about when people create things. So naturally I kind of latched on to Mama Sauce and they're creating amazing things, but also championing the work of the artists. So I think I had like maybe tweeted or something, excited to take your guys' workshop. And Nick had kind of, he told this was literally a year later when he was telling me the story, kind of confessing it. And he's like, doing a lot of these things and talks and stuff. He's like, you get these kind of hyper fans, and you have to kind of like, you have to take note so that, because you know that they're going to like show up. And he's like, I think you're the only person that I ever kind of like earmarked as a hyper fan that actually like turned out to be like a normal person. He's like, usually I'm spot on with these. So we like kind of laugh about it now because he's good. We're good friends.
Thankfully, his stalker radar was off that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I mean, we started with our friends, and it just so happens that our friends, run a paper company and, a boutique print shop, which mm-hmm. falls right in line with what we're doing. And then naturally, like our knowing that we needed a website and digital support, reached out to Element 3, and, they've been awesome in supporting us and kind of championing what we're doing.
We actually just started asking guys around the office if they'd help kind of like moonlight and do some dev work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our creative director is the first one caught wind of what we were up to and asked us. And after we kind of told him our idea, he was pretty hyped about it. And that's when he took it to Tiffany, our boss, and she, that story we just told, she got that ball rolling. And as soon as, yeah, she kind of saw the idea in front of her, she offered, yeah, Element 3's full support as far as our digital needs. So, but yeah, that...
One thing we had to do, though, I mean, while, like, maybe with French paper, it was just a mere, like, phone call with Brian, and he was like, cool, I love this. I'll donate paper. Mm-hmm. We'll donate paper to you guys and envelopes with Nick and Mama Sauce. And then with Element 3, it was much more of a pitch. We had to put a presentation together and kind of pitch it to the management team at Element 3. And they kind of decided if this was something they wanted to get involved in. Mm-hmm. And get, time and money to. And then same with Nick. He's a businessman, so he doesn't make any decision lightly.
Right. So, well, and that's, I have a self-serving curiosity on asking that because, with the podcast, we're kind of treating it as a business too and, looking to get sponsors, down the road when we can, present things. But how did you prepare for those presentations? Because that's, for me, having done pitch presentations at work for a project, that seems very different than doing a pitch presentation asking for money.
Yeah. I mean, it literally all started with the pro forma and those, kind of forecasting that. And then also we had, like with Element 3, we had to talk to the dev team and mm-hmm. Copywriter and the digital team and kind of get an hours from them, like estimated hours on what it was going to take to do the website build, because that was that was kind of the big project, and that's what Element 3 kind of bought in on in the beginning. So being able, we went there and we were like, hey, this is exactly what we're asking for, and this is what we need. So being very intentional and very specific about it always helps.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think probably those pitches were a little easier. Just you got the edge off with Mama Sauce and Element 3. Busy Beaver Buttons out of Chicago, we had no prior contact with at all, and that was basically a straight cold call. And they bought in, which I think we had a hearty high five after that phone call.
Because we knew that was the buttons were going to be our biggest expense.
Sure.
So they did something awesome for us. They committed the first 6 months of giving us buttons for free.
Oh, wow.
Which was huge. So that really got us, off the ground and going. And was, the reason why, part of the reason why we've been, successful to this point.
Mm-hmm.
We've since reevaluated that relationship, which, we talked about that, and that's what they could commit at the time. And then we revisited it, and we still get, they still take care of us for sure.
Gotcha. So you literally just started that with cold call. Did you just like seek out a button maker and,
actually they came recommended, from Brian French.
Oh, okay.
He had heard of them. I don't know if he'd ever actually used them. But he had just, he had remember meeting someone from there and just kind of mm-hmm. recommended them. And then it was kind of funny, the lady that owns it, she actually went to IU, which is in Bloomington, Indiana, south of us. And she actually started the company there and then moved, and then it got moved to Chicago when and that's when they really started to get bigger. So there's an Indiana connection that we didn't even know about at the time. It's kind of funny.
Gotcha. So, you've developed, you honed your pitch to sponsors. You've got the business models underway. You've got some new things that you're reevaluating with that. How does that, the day-to-day operations of making it work, how much time does that take for y'all?
I think we have it down. It's about 20 to 24 hours a month between the two of us. Managing social media and answering emails from buttons that didn't get delivered or got damaged.
Talking to the accountant and the lawyer.
People want to change their address. Like designers move a lot. I don't know what it is. And they don't just move like in the same city. They move across the country, which is awesome.
A lot of wanderlust. Yeah,
that's one of those things we didn't like think about in the beginning is like, how are we going to, you know, manage when people move?
Well, so that's what I was curious about is if you guys were doing that yourself or if you had help, you know, managing that side of it, because, you know, the, especially like the social media and the accounting side of it. I mean, I know you have an accountant, but
team effort for sure. Like I said, I think that goes back to, you know, we've learned a lot about the business and running a business and a lot about ourselves, in the last, you know, 15, 14 months for sure. And the hard part is that you always know that you could do better. But one thing we've kind of decided on is like, hey, like, it's okay if it's another day. Like, it's not going to be in the world if the buttons don't ship for one more day. It's the world's not going to stop turning because life gets, you know, in the way. And sometimes you just have to realize, like, you can't stress out about that. This sometimes you just have to put it away for a night and get back to it the next day fresh. So
yeah, and the fun thing is that after 16 months, it's still fun. Last night we threw out a social post that I was actually working on client work last night and took a half hour break and created an image and wrote a little something and threw it up, you know, and it was fun, you know, like I was grinding through some not so fun stuff and, you know, it's like, hey, I get to do this for a half hour. Sweet.
So what has kind of surprised both of you most about the business side that you enjoy that you thought that you would probably hate?
I guess it's just like there's always a problem to solve. We've learned that that's never done, that there's always something to tend to. One of the things that we're going through right now that's taking a lot longer than we probably ever anticipated was becoming a full-fledged 501c3. Getting our full not-for-profit status. Mm-hmm. And that's a process that we've been going through for 6 months.
Yeah, it started in October. I think October or November is when we started it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's taken a while and it's not done yet. While we technically can operate as a 501c3,
you have a provisional status
for 2 years until you basically prove that you are one.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still act. You still get all the benefits of a non-for-profit. So
what do you, how do you prove that you're a non-profit?
Taxes.
I'm not taking a salary off this.
I think the one big surprising thing for me is that you can tell people that it's for charity. Mm-hmm. But until you like literally say, we don't make any money off this, you know, it's just a passion project. Sometimes it just doesn't click. That, like, we don't take anything off the top. We do everything and we make every decision with the end goal in mind. Like, how can we donate as much money as possible to our charities? So that's always, it's kind of interesting. And sometimes it makes it really easy when you have that clear defined goal and you have, you know, everything bounces off that. So it's like, hey, if this doesn't make sense to reach that end goal, then we won't do it right now.
Sure. So, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but on your website, you kind of have it split out of, you know, what every dollar is broken down to of, you know, X amount goes to supplies, X amount goes to this, X amount goes to this, and the remainder goes to charity, right?
That's a really good point. And I think that's something we learned early on is that, you can't be vague about these things when you're donating things for charity and saying that proceeds go to charity. You want to be, it's beneficial if you can be as transparent as possible, so that people don't make, false assumptions, against you. And that's happened in the past. But so that's kind of why we're as transparent as we possibly can be.
So, excuse me. Well, so, you know, you talked about expanding and reevaluating things like that, and you've got your two current endowments, I guess.
That'll work.
Fancy word. Do you see expanding that at all, or do you hope to just be able to give more to those two organizations?
Yeah, you know, we've thought about how we could get these opportunities in other markets. Because yeah, I mean, we love Indiana, we love the Midwest, but yeah, this is a need that's nationwide. So that is something that we've talked about, whether we put it up for a vote or have suggestions, maybe members get to vote on where a charity might be. I think that we really wanted to give Art with a Heart and 826 Shy another year. Sure. We've faced a lot of unexpected twists and turns, and yeah, the ownership of a company that kind of took some money away from our end donations. And I think we wanted to kind of take this second year and really capitalize on our momentum.
It was that big electric stapler, right?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that we're not trying to keep it all to ourselves. I think that there's opportunities for us to start helping impact other areas around the nation.
Yeah, and I think originally we thought we wanted to do to give to a national charity, but we kind of realized that the amount of money we'd be donating early on might not make a difference. Not mm-hmm. that it wouldn't make a difference. I mean, every little bit helps. But we thought we could affect change a lot more by targeting more local, smaller charities and make a bigger impact in the beginning.
No, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, if you can give, you know, $500 here and there to a charity that maybe brings in $10,000 in a year, that's a lot bigger fish than if you're giving $500 to somebody that brings in $10 million in a year.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you think about it, $500 can buy school supply or art supplies for a whole entire year for one school.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about. It's not that much money. It's kind of crazy. So.
So if people want to, you know, get more involved and, you know, not just sign up for buttons, but you know, you kind of mentioned that forming that community behind it. How can they do that?
You need to be patient with us right now, I think while the community thing is high on our list, we want to make some updates to the site.
Sure.
And kind of, do some things to it that we've been wanting to do, like the, you know, highlights, the past buttons and the artists and, you know, pay a little bit more homage to those people, first, and then just some kind of housekeeping things. We just implemented, user accounts so that people can, you know, update their own addresses. But that only, you know, that's been more of a process, than what we kind of anticipated. And not everyone have, you know, only the newest people have signed up or on user accounts and everyone else isn't. So, just some things that we need to do first to kind of clean everything up,
sure,
before we kind of venture into that new territory. One thing Jay from Cotton Bureau kind of told us was like, don't think that you have to grow quickly or add the newest thing, to continue to grow, mm-hmm. Make what you have as best you can. And then you'll know when it's time, to kind of add that new feature or do the next thing. So we kind of took it, you know, we've really kind of taken that to heart. So.
Gotcha. Well, in the meantime, if people want to give you money, where can they do that at?
Yeah. on our site, inchbyinch.org, we actually have a PayPal donation button in the top right corner. Pretty okay. Simple and easy. We've actually had several people make some donations through there. So, I mean, that money is pretty much going straight to charity. So
yeah.
We will take it in any form.
And then another way, I mean, you can sign up to become a member and you get sweet buttons in the mail every month for a year. Get some casual mail. And then you can also go to shop.inchxinch.org and buy some swag. We have a bunch of buttons we need to get up there. But you can buy all the past buttons on there, and stickers and some kids tees. Designers have kids. They like wearing cool shirts too. So
I need to get my kids a couple of those.
Yeah. And then we have, you know, posters, some Alan Peters and Draplin posters up there as well. So, and that's kind of another thing we're kind of looking we have all this kind of artwork, and how can we not, we don't own the artwork. The artist always owns it.
Sure.
But how can we kind of expand on that, like we did with the Alan Peters and the Draplin posters, mm-hmm. Kind of offer it in a new way. So yeah.
Cool.
Hang tight on the community, folks.
And you guys are what, at @inchxinch on Twitter and Instagram, yeah, correct?
It's @inch_x_inch.
Ah, okay.
Waters. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then what's your guys' personal Twitters?
@BobWing_or @BobWing_, depending on how you read it.
Yes. And I'm @DrewHillAD, not Drew Hillad.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for taking the time. And we end every episode by saying, go out and hug some necks, which is just kind of a way of, you know, saying, go out, meet some new people, make friends, and don't sit in the corner and be a wallflower. I know you've heard it before.
Yeah, we like the hug.
Yeah. So,
if you wouldn't mind taking us out and telling people.
Yeah. Go out and hug some necks, people, and make sure you go to Creative South 2017.
Woohoo! Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks.
Not a problem. You can find out more about Inch by Inch over at inchxinch.org, or find them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can check out what Drew and Bob are up to by following the links in the show notes. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter @CreativeSOPod and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @CreativeSouthGA, or over at creativesouthga.com. And I'm @JFrostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. If you want to engage with the podcast more, check out a new podcasting app called Remarks that allows you to add notes and comments about the episodes, get feedback from other listeners, and hear from me as well. You can find it over at remarks.fm. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.